We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Well, the breaking news that happened just moments after we left the show yesterday, so I know that it was a collusion by the Harris campaign to not let us on Jenna Ellis in the Morning comment on it yesterday. We had to wait a full 24 hours. Was the VP pick of Tim Walz, who is the current governor of Minnesota. And this came as a little bit of a surprise for those, myself included, who a lot of us had, if you're a betting person, and you shouldn't be because that's not Christian, but who had our money on either Josh Shapiro, governor of Pennsylvania, or Senator Mark Kelly out of Arizona. This one came as a little bit of a surprise until you kind of get into some of the reasons why the Harris campaign is not only choosing him, but also messaging this in a way that is an extreme contrast from the Trump-Vance ticket. So at a rally in Pennsylvania last night, this is how Kamala Harris introduced Tim Walz in Pennsylvania. This is cut 4.
I set out to find a partner who can help build this brighter future. A leader who will help unite our nation and move us forward. So Pennsylvania, I'm here today because I found such a leader. Governor Tim Walz of the great state of Minnesota.
All right, so who is Tim Walz? That's the question that even the New York Times and some of the leftist outlets are posing this morning, because a lot of people aren't really familiar with him. He's not as well known in at least the mainstream media as some of the other more popular to the left or known governors across the country that are in blue states, like a Gretchen Whitmer or, of course, a Gavin Newsom, or even Josh Shapiro, who was considered for the ticket. And why Tim Walz? So he does have some federal legislative history. He was a ranking member of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. That's going to be a contrast, his record versus J.D. Vance. So Vance being a veteran, that almost cancels out that particular talking point. Of course, Kamala Harris is not a veteran. Neither is Donald Trump on the top of the ticket. So some of these things are a little bit evening out. And he was elected in 2018 to governor of Minnesota after 3 terms in office for the U.S. House of Representatives from Minnesota. And he is going to bring, as the New York Times said this morning, quote, big Midwestern dad energy to the presidential campaign. So this is going to be the main contrast here, because they, the left, are positioning him as a moderate, as America's dad. I've heard that. I've seen that a lot on social media in the last 24 hours, that you have Mamala Kamala Harris, but then you also, so basically America's fun aunt and America's dad are now on the ticket. This is a fun ticket, but it's people that you can look up to. And really, this actually gets into what the left is truly positioning, which is socialism. And we know this, and it's grounded in the worldview of Marxism and communism, ultimately, that the government is here to take care of you versus the government is here to protect and preserve your rights to property rights, to exercising your individual freedoms and liberties and self-government. And the government is here just to make sure that nobody else comes in and takes your property or your rights and redistributes them however the government sees fit. But that's exactly what a Tim Walz on the leftist ticket is poised to do. And one of the clips that has been circulating and I hope gets a lot of play is Walz on progressive values. And listen to how he describes what socialism means to him. This is cut five.
Don't ever shy away from our progressive values. One person's socialism is another person's neighborliness. Just do the work.
One person's socialism is another person's neighborliness. So let's break this down just a little bit, because as we've been talking about, this all comes back down to worldview. And this isn't just a contrast of, you know, race and gender and, oh, you know, she, I mean, like I tweeted yesterday, Kamala found her old white guy on the ticket because that's what we were all predicting, right, to balance out all of these other sort of top line issues. It all comes down to worldview. So when he's talking about progressive values, and we don't want to shy away from those, and one person's socialism is another person's neighborliness. The problem with this is that neighborliness is voluntary. If I take my hard-earned money and I decide to go and support a candidate, I decide to give to AFA, for example, like a lot of you do, and we're very grateful for that, or I decide to give to my neighbor, whatever that looks like. If I decide to bake a cherry pie and go give it to my neighbor, that's all voluntary. That's me using my resources, my hard-earned resources, whether it's money or property, whatever that is, and choosing to bless someone else through my free giving. Progressive values and communism is the government taking from me involuntarily and then deciding who gets my hard-earned resources. So it's a completely different view. It's not neighborliness. It's communism. It's saying I'm going to take from the population, and that the government actually has the legitimate authority to take and then to redistribute how it sees fit. And Barry Goldwater, back in his book in the early 1980s, I mean, this was a fear of the GOP even, you know, way back then. I mean, this is the decade, you know, remember, I was born in 1984, right? So this is literally in I think his book was written in 1989. So, you know, so I was very young. But even at that moment, the discussion about the rise of a GOP that wanted to raise taxes, that wanted to have government do more and more things, have more and more handouts, have more and more social programs and all of these things, Barry Goldwater argued completely contravened the notion of a legitimate government and the meaning of conservatism. Because the whole idea is that we should, as citizens, voluntarily participate in projects for the government that we see are valuable, not that we have to be compelled to participate with our resources. And yet, when we see what the uniparty looks like today, a lot of people are talking about how the Overton window is shifting and how basically what was considered socialism and extreme leftism, you know, back in the 1980s, is now considered basically part of the right because of how much spending the GOP is complicit in or even responsible for. I mean, when you look at how much they're taxing us to send billions of dollars over to Ukraine, I didn't participate in that voluntarily. I didn't vote and say, you know, yes, I think that that's a worthwhile project. Yes, out of the goodness of my heart, I'm deciding to give to the people of Ukraine. I mean, why not start a GoFundMe or you know, something that is entirely voluntary? And I say that tongue in cheek, of course. But the government thinking that it can just continue to raise taxes more and more and more to do all of the things that it wants to do without the citizens' voluntary participation participation and consent goes against the very notion of what our civil government was designed and founded on. It contravenes our highest law of the land. And this is why, you know, I personally think that the 16th Amendment and a lot of the amendments, you know, that were in that same era were absolutely terrible. I mean, just like how we popularly elect United States senators now, rather than that being the representation of the states and having state sovereignty have much more of a voice in Washington. You know, a lot of these, the Reconstruction Amendments even, but the 16th Amendment that allowed the federal government and gave it the power to lay and collect income taxes without any sort of constitutional threshold has had the practical effect of advancing communism more than I think almost anything else that we have done to amend our U.S. Constitution. And the way that we have given and just handed over to the federal government more and more power, because, you know, money is power, resources are power in a sense, and this, the whole idea of being able to be secure in our property and to be able to understand that we get to say what we participate in. Now, I'm perfectly fine with taxing as a principle. I mean, I think that for some things that are basic necessities, like, you know, road construction, fire and police, I mean, you know, some of those basic things that we all have in our local communities, some of the very basic things, you know, in Washington, that's fine. But this just completely unfettered power to advance more and more communism, we're doing that primarily through taxation. And with a Harris-Walz ticket, we're going to see more and more of the push to advance socialism and communism as neighborliness, which is what Tim Walz is saying. And I hope that that clip gets so much play, because they are just broadcasting in full daylight. They are running and not even shying away from, they're not even hiding the ball. They are running on being progressive, socialist, communist. And if we care about our rights, if we care about our property, and we should, because that's an individual right that our founders recognized is given from God, our creator. Property rights are something that we have by virtue of being human beings made in the image of God. If we do not want our rights to be drastically eroded in a Harris-Walz administration, we have to continue to go back to arguing and convincing our fellow voters to vote the value of truth. And if we have truth as a fundamental starting point, that our country was founded on truth, which is a recognition that God endows us with our rights, they are unalienable, which means that they can't be bought, sold, or abridged at whim. What Tim Walz thinks about neighborliness doesn't mean that he has the power or the legitimacy in government to come and take away my property and redistribute it as he sees fit. We will then, as Christians and as conservatives, we will argue for our economic policy, our foreign policy, our parental rights policy, our First Amendment policy, our AI policy. I mean, all of these things that we discuss, pro-life, I mean, all of these issues that are near and dear to our hearts, we will argue from first and foremost a standpoint of truth. And we have to build up from there. And if we don't understand the worldview distinctions that this is communism versus self-government, I mean, that's what it boils down to, a Marxist, socialist, communist worldview and a transformation of America. That is what is on the ballot in November. And if we don't understand that and we are not communicating that effectively, and we're sitting here, you know, pushing back that, you know, oh no, J.D. Vance isn't weird and how dare you? I mean, who cares, right? I don't care if J.D. Vance is a little bit weird. At least he's not a communist, right? And yes, are there things to criticize about Trump and Vance? Of course. And I have been the first one to do that, and I'll continue to do that and to point out the problems with the GOP platform and how that Overton window is shifting. But the bottom line here is that we have to focus and absolutely hammer on the worldview distinctions and not let the left get away with this sleight of hand of saying, oh, this is America's dad. This is America's fun aunt. And look, isn't this great? We are going to go out and vote for them so that we can let mom and dad of America take care of me so that I don't have to worry. That's not the government's role. The government's role is not to take care of you. The government's job is to preserve and protect your rights so that you can go out and live the American experience, but first and foremost, do what God has for you to do and self-determine for yourself and your family what God has for you to do. And you can do that without being restrained by the government. This is a really big issue. So we're going to be back in the next break with Daniel Horowitz from the Blaze to talk about more of the policies and how Tim Walz is not a moderate. And if you don't believe me already, then Daniel will have a lot more to say. We'll be right back. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 will underwrite ultrasounds for an entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Obviously, the big news of the day is that Tim Walz has been nominated as the VP, or is now the presumptive nominee, I should say, for Kamala Harris. My view on it is it just highlights how radical Kamala Harris is. This is a person who listened to the Hamas wing of her own party and selecting a nominee. This is a guy who's proposed shipping more manufacturing jobs to China, who wants to make the American people more reliant on garbage energy instead of good American energy, and has proposed defunding the police just as Kamala Harris does. I think it's interesting, actually, they make an interesting tag team because, of course, Tim Walz allowed rioters to burn down Minneapolis in the summer of 2020, and then the few who got caught, Kamala Harris helped bail them out of jail. So it is more instructive for what it says about Kamala Harris that she doesn't care about the border, she doesn't care about crime, she doesn't care about American energy, and most importantly, she doesn't care about the Americans who have been made to suffer under those policies.
That was vice presidential candidate on the GOP side, J.D. Vance, responding to Kamala Harris's selection of a VP. And so a lot of people are wondering, will we get a Tim Walz, J.D. Vance debate? I, for one, would love that and would really look forward to that because I think the clash of worldviews would be very starkly evident. But let's welcome in Daniel Horowitz, who is a senior editor at The Blaze and host of CR Podcast with Daniel Horowitz. You can follow him on X at RM. Conservative. So, Daniel, who is Tim Walz, and why are both sides, it seems like, excited about this pick? Republicans and Democrats actually think it's a good pick for their own side.
Well, if only we could get JD's messaging on the top of the ticket, I think this might be a cakewalk. I mean, that's the perfect messaging. This is really anarcho-tyranny. Tim Walz embodies that anarcho-tyranny where under his stewardship, you were allowed to burn down businesses, but you weren't allowed to open businesses. What was fascinating is I had to help someone get an attorney who was thrown in jail for opening her restaurant in Minnesota, literally at the time that the rioters were roaming free. So if you look at the issues of this election, inflation, invasion, indoctrination, crime, Hamas, on all five of those, the Democrats could not have embraced and worn themselves on their sleeve more than they did with both Harris and Walz, you know, San Francisco and Minneapolis versus ordered liberty of ordinary Americans. I mean, this is it. If you accentuate those issues and elevate them to the point that the election becomes about that, it's hard to see how Republicans lose. But, you know, if ultimately it becomes about distractions and personalities, I think we know how that ends. And to answer your question there, what this election from the Democrat side tells me is that Democrats from their end are pretty confident of the latter dynamic, that they feel that Trump's going to make it about himself. They feel that they're on a winning streak since 2017. They've pretty much won every must-win election in a swing state, you know, Senate, governor, Congress, state legislature, you name it. And they felt that they did not need to buy an insurance policy with a guy like Mark Kelly for Arizona or Josh Shapiro in Pennsylvania, and just went for the glory, just went for their base, wear themselves on their sleeve, which they're always proud to do, and they're daring us to defeat them.
Yeah, and to your point, Daniel, with the messaging, I mean, we saw, and even, you know, Laura Ingraham and people who, you know, are hardcore Trumpers responded very negatively to Trump's comments in Atlanta when he went after not only Governor Brian Kemp, who, you know, has a 63% approval rating. He's a popular governor in Georgia, and also went after his wife for not endorsing him. And a lot of people just said, what are you doing? Why are you aiming your fire at fellow Republicans in a swing state that you absolutely need in order to prevail? Whatever your personal issues with Kemp are, at least wait just another less than 100 days. Like, just at least aim your fire over at the Democrats. And so, I was just sitting there thinking, this is just classic Trump, that he doesn't really care. And I think that is going to hurt the Republican ticket moving forward.
You know, this is really frustrating because, as you well know, I'm very involved in down-the-ballot primaries. And I am all for getting rid of Republicans like this. Like, I'm very upset about Brian Kemp. He has basically turned Georgia into a green energy mecca. I have a lot of things I don't like about him, but here's the reality. He is not up for a primary or general election. Like you noted, he's very popular. It's the general election in Georgia. You got to win Georgia. So we had all these states, all these primaries, where it was the right time to go and get rid of these people. And 9 out of 10 times, Trump endorses the rhino, which is so bizarre. I mean, just last night, we had, you know, the Missouri governor's race, Bill Eigel, Freedom Caucus guy. All Trump supporters supported him. And Trump's like, well, you know, they're all good, including the rhino Kehoe, who actually won. And, you know, had Trump endorsed Eigel would have won. So when it's actually time to drain the swamp in the primaries, he doesn't do it and usually does the opposite. And then in Georgia, where there was no primary, there's nothing to be gained from it. Everyone knows he's very popular there. You got to carry Georgia. He just shoots himself in the foot. And it's like, you know, we can't be more pro-Trump than he is himself. This is what's so frustrating. You can, on the one hand, tell us nothing else matters but the top of the ticket, general election. We're going to die if Trump doesn't win. But then, I mean, then you have an obligation to then get on message and have messaging and ground game. And, you know, we saw that Washington Post article that they're outsourcing their entire ground game to third-party organizations. This is what I think the Democrats are seeing. At the end of the day, Harris is up 3-4 points now. Now, I'm not worried about 1-2 weeks of polling, but what I am worried about is the Democrats having an uninterrupted winning streak in Georgia, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan since 2017. If you go back, you know, those are the states that matter. They have won. You know, we have 4 Democrat senators from Georgia and Arizona, frankly, from all those states, except Ron John, who was an incumbent, held on by 1 point in Wisconsin. It's really bad. Okay, there is something really going on there. And I'll just close with the fact that you look at every poll and they show the same story. If you ask people, do you approve of Trump's presidency, meaning retrospectively? Yes, that 56% did in a recent YouGov poll. Who do you support on the major issues? Crime, immigration, every economic issue, every foreign policy issue, it's Trump over Harris. But then why do we continue to lose? And it's image and ground game, image and ground game. There's something holding voters back. He needs to act presidential. If were he to do that and assuage those voters' concerns, we'd be able to make it about the issues, which clearly he'd win on.
Yeah, that's so well said. And I'm speaking with Daniel Horowitz, who's a senior editor at The Blaze and host of CR Podcast. You can follow him at RM Conservative on X. And I would encourage everyone to do that because he posts a lot of this type of commentary and really important information for us to know. And that is a really a great point as well, that while a lot of people are very focused on just the top of the ticket and have this sort of doomsday messaging of, you know, the Republic is going to end if the Kamala Walls ticket gets in there. And so we can't criticize Trump at all. We're also not thinking down the ballot, because if Republicans, at least especially in Congress, can hold a House majority and make gains in the Senate, that will thwart a lot of the policy, even if Kamala gets in office. Of course, I mean, there are executive orders, and we've seen what the Biden administration has done. But let's talk about those down ticket races. I mean, how much does this pick help the Democrats, where you just talked about how Trump isn't really helping the down ballot tickets, especially for an overall conservative platform? Does a Walls VP selection and leaning into and fully embracing their communist messaging actually help the Democrats down ticket?
So, you know, I think if anything, it actually does hurt them, because I do think the public, and every poll shows this, the public is leery of their agenda. Now, I think because of what we decided to put at the top of our ticket, it gives a lot of them reticence to jump over to the Republican Party. But I could see definitely down the ballot people not wanting to vote for these Democrat candidates. So let's face it, they're all reflective of that. Walls is just more obvious about it. I mean, this, you know, we're calling him Tampon Tim now because he signed an order putting tampons in males' bathrooms. He signed a bill, basically, Take Pride Act, that, you know, bans nonprofits from so-called discriminating against gender identity, which might include pedophilia. This guy banned all normal cars in the state by 2040. This is a man that, you know, you have in Minnesota now, a 12-year-old cannot sit in the front seat, but a 12-year-old could get a sex change castration without his parents' consent. I mean, this is the sort of stuff that these guys believe in. But I will say this. Here's the important thing, I think, for your audience and for all of us to recognize. It's at least a 50% chance that Harris will win. I mean, don't shoot the messenger. That's a reality. It is what it is. Republicans have an image problem. They have a ground game problem. A lot could happen, and hopefully things will change. But the good news is, no matter what, because of the polarization, right, that they didn't pick like a Shapiro-Bashir ticket, let's say. I mean, this is as radical as it comes. In red states, Trump will do very well, no matter what. And that will have its effect down ballot. You know, and Republicans will dominate in the legislatures, statewide offices in all these states. So, you know, this is really where we need to be thinking. And I want to leave your listeners with this thought. Look at what Tim Walz did in Minnesota. It's a remarkable story from the communist perspective. For years, Republicans controlled the Senate there. Even though they couldn't win statewide, but they controlled the Senate. The minute they won the trifecta, so the House, Senate, and governorship in 2022, and by the way, they won it by one seat, to the point that today it's tied because one of the corrupt Democrats had to resign, so there's going to be a special election. The point is, it's very tenuous. So you think maybe they tiptoe in, you know, we're scared of losing it because it's tenuous control. They went in there and did everything they can on pro-criminal stuff, sanctuary city stuff, vote early, vote often, same-day registration, you know, abortion up until the day of birth, and then gutting the protections for babies born after botched abortions. I mean, no energy allowed by 2040. The most radical things. The question we should be asking is, there's over 20 states where Republicans have permanent, they're not tenuous, they can't lose them, permanent supermajorities. How come we only hear about one, about DeSantis in Florida? Okay, why don't we have 20 of those? See, if Harris wins, we are going to need states to take the 10th Amendment to the next level. We're going to need to interpose against federal tyranny on, you know, DOJ persecutions and energy policy, financial policy, illegal immigration. They're going to have state enforcement. This is where our head needs to get. It's not winner take all. We have a federalist system, and even if we so-called lose, there's half the country we should still be able to win, but only with the right Republicans.
Absolutely. And to your point, I was talking to someone in Governor DeSantis's office when Kamala Harris became the presumptive nominee and said, you know, OK, I'm a Floridian now. And even if the worst happens and she gets in office, like, Governor DeSantis will still protect all of us. Right. And this person goes, oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, she's not going to come and walk all over the free state of Florida. And that's the type of reaction that it does need to be, in the sense that we have a federalist system. And so I think that the overall message here is don't be as discouraged for the top level for everyone listening. And if you live in a blue state, if Kamala wins, then maybe consider going to a red state, because those very damaging policies will not just be accentuated and your governor won't just applaud Kamala Harris on. You'll actually have some clash and some pushback, and you won't have the types of just ridiculous Marxist communist policies that you will see increasingly so in the blue states. And so to that end, I mean, what is your thought, Daniel, overall on this whole messaging of kind of a national divorce? Because that's of course the next logical question is to say, as we're seeing this contrast between blue and red states, is it just time to say, okay, we are so divided, there is nothing that unites us as liberals and conservatives, that it's just time to figure out a different path?
You know, I saw in the news in one single day in Tim Walz's Minnesota that a 12-year-old can't sit in the front seat, but the state court ruled that you don't have a right to self-defense. You have to run away from an attacker and you can't shoot them. And I said, you know, I looked at that and I was like, you can't share a country with that. We cannot share a country with that. I'm a big fan of national divorce. Now, I want to explain what that means. It doesn't mean something that's not achievable, that tomorrow you have kind of like circa Fort Sumter and, you know, a different flag and, you know, there's no reciprocity or, you know, travel back and forth or whatever. But what it means is this: in the short term, in the long term, it will flow from there. But in the short term, it means making red states as red as the blue states already are blue. It means governing the red states, which is with as much ordered liberty as Tim Walz, in a matter of one legislative session in 2023, turned Minnesota into a communist state. That's what it means, and that's what we're not doing. What has frustrated me the last couple of years, as sleeping through these primaries, as our voters and, frankly, our colleagues in conservative media as well, sleep through these red state primaries, sleep through Trump's endorsement of every Chamber of Commerce, Mitch McConnell type of Republican. It's so bizarre. But what frustrates me is that DeSantis did what he did, not in Idaho, not in Alabama, not in Oklahoma. This was, you know, formerly a 50-50 state. I mean, he got in there by the skin of his teeth in 2018. Very narrow win, about a half a percentage point. Very narrow win. And he was able to govern in a way that wasn't just so good for the people and the quality of life, but also politically, culturally changed the state, both people already there and then invited people to come in. And now it's a solid red state. Why don't we have that in the Deep South and the Great Plains and, you know, the Rocky Mountain Western states? Why don't we have that? We have these communist rhino Republicans. I mean, there's an article I want your listeners to read from Bloomberg. Red state Republicans say they'll defend Biden-era green jobs. And they're embracing, because they want jobs in their state, this green energy transition, which is so, so dangerous. And they're just a bunch of corporate shills. Almost every one of these governors, I've worked several election cycles to get these governors out, and we have failed to elect a second or third DeSantis when we should be able to have 22, 24 of them. That is a failure of our movement, right? You have 20, you know, DeSantis once said on my show, by the way, that he would have a state-based return to Mexico policy if he had other governors to work with, but he doesn't. They won't do it. They don't have the guts. That's what national divorce ultimately means. If you had 24 DeSantises, it would logically flow from there. Maybe you'll have, you know, Social Security will be recognized. You could travel back and forth. But look at California, look at Minnesota. Every red state would be a mirror image of that.
Yeah, so true. And I wish that the GOP had the political will to do that. And we weren't timid in the red states to be as open about our conservative policy and our pro-America and pro-Judeo-Christian worldview founding as the left is about their communist socialism. And I love that definition, Daniel, of a national divorce, because if we would take the 50 laboratories of democracy and at least the 20 or 22 that we control and to push them, America would be largely great again, regardless of who is in Washington at the White House. So well said. So appreciate your insights as always. Thanks so much for dropping by. You can follow Daniel Horowitz at RM Conservative on X. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Fostering and adoption is not a band-aid for infertility.
Nope,
like it is a calling, and God can change the desire of your heart and make that so rewarding. It's the most beautiful, selfless thing. It's pure religion, but it's not a fix to I desire biological child. God has to deal with that in your heart separately.
Hannah's Heart, encouraging couples through infertility and miscarriage. Saturdays, 4 a.m. Central on AFR or on the AFR app.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and let's welcome in Congressman Bob Good, who is proudly serving the 5th Congressional District of Virginia and the chair of the Freedom Caucus. So good morning, Congressman Bob Good, and what do you think of the radical leftist communist ticket that is Kamala Harris and Tim Walz?
Good morning, Jenna. Great to be with you. Thanks for having me again. It is hard to imagine how you could have a more radical ticket than Obama-Biden or Biden-Harris, but it seems like the Democrats may have done just that, as you said, that the Harris-Waltz ticket is the most extreme in the history of the country. It's incredible how the parrots or the seals, the clapping seals, or the parrots that just repeat the same talking points in the national media across the country are talking about Walz like he's some kind of a centrist, some kind of a moderate, some kind of a compromiser who reaches across the aisle, when in fact he is extreme to the worst degree. Your previous guest, the great Mr. Horowitz, was talking about Governor DeSantis. You know, Florida is the model for the country. Minnesota is a disaster if you took those policies and applied them across the country. People of Minnesota are suffering under Tim Walz. Imagine the country suffering under Harris and Walz together. But he's a perfect fit for Kamala. Kamala, who, of course, finished last in the Democrat primaries 4 years ago. Kamala, who has presided with Joe Biden on making the country worse by every standard of measurement. I mean, there's nothing you can point to that's going well under this administration. There's nothing they can take credit for. And the only people doing better under Biden-Harris are the illegal aliens. And so here's the next thing. Let's get Tim Walz, the guy who's a supporter of sanctuary cities and states, who wants amnesty, who can't give enough money to illegals, who let the rioters burn Minneapolis in his state. He told the police to stand down. He delayed the National Guard. He's soft on crime. He wants to defund the police. He's a climate extremist who wants to ban gas-powered vehicles. Of course, that's what Harris wants to do as well. He wants sexually explicit material distributed in elementary schools. He's extreme on his trans LGBTQ agenda. He doesn't believe in any age limits, any age limits. Matter of fact, he signed a law to that effect. Any age limits on surgery on minor children, no age limit. He has passed or signed laws allowing abortion up to the moment of birth and even prohibiting born alive protection, you know, that a baby who survives an abortion has to be cared for. He was extreme on COVID and lockdowns and masks. And he even had a snitch line for people to call in and to tell on their neighbors if they weren't abiding by his COVID mandates. He was just like Cuomo enforcing seniors into nursing homes where they were being sent to die. He is an extremist, and as much as the media and the Democrats are trying to cover it up, we got to do the job that you're doing of trying to expose it and let the American people know exactly what they would be voting for if they voted for this terrible Harris-Walz ticket.
And Congressman Bob Good, I mean, that raises the question, do you think that the GOP has a messaging problem in exposing how radical leftist this ticket actually is, or are people going to be fooled that Walz and Kamala are actually moderates?
Well, I certainly hope not. I hope people will not be fooled. You know, there is some concern that with Joe Biden, that people, the low information voter, the person who wasn't as invested in the issues, if you will, but just goes on the superficial, it was easy to see the doddering old fella who was getting discombobulated and disoriented and forgetful and struggling physically and cognitively to perform his duties. Well, Kamala's younger and she's more attractive personality, if you will, if you're not looking at the substance and you don't see the cackling and you don't listen to actually what she says with the word salads. I mean, she just did it again the other day with talk. She does it every day, but, you know, she goes off script talking about when they were welcoming back the hostages that were released. She's just a disaster every time she speaks. But not every some of those swing voters, those centrist voters who go back and forth election, they're not doing the deep dive that your listening audience is doing. And so there is concern that folks can be fooled because the media is telling them again, this is a moderate ticket. This is a centrist ticket. These are people who have Midwestern values is what they're saying about Tim Walz. He's had Midwestern values because he's from Minnesota, which he has made fun of. He has belittled people in the flyover country, so-called. We've got to have a collective effort to expose how extreme they are. The American people do not support the extreme views of the Democrat Party, and Harris and Walz epitomize the extreme views that is today's Democrat Party.
Yeah, and to your point, Congressman Bob Good, even the New York Times, who of course is going to do the PR work of the Democrats for them, they're positioning Tim Walz this morning saying he's going to bring, quote, big Midwestern dad energy to the presidential campaign. I mean, that's how they're positioning him, as this likable, lovable dad who, you know, posting all these photos of him smiling with kids around him when he's signing just horrendous legislation and all of these things. So what would your advice be to your party, and specifically to Donald Trump and J.D. Vance, as they head into the last 3 months of this campaign?
Well, I think we've got to be bold and strong. I think we've got to energize our base. And, you know, we've got to keep get the conservatives motivated with a conservative agenda that we're going to implement in 2025, coming from hopefully a majority Republican House, majority Republican Senate, as well as President Trump in the White House again. But we've got to expose how extreme they are on the border, and of course how strong President Trump and his policies were on the border. We've got to talk about inflation and how the American people are suffering at the grocery store, the gas pump, when they pay the rent bill, when they pay the utility bill. We've got to talk about how Biden Harris have weakened America on the national stage, how we've got conflicts all around the globe as a result of that weak foreign policy. We've got threats from Iran. We've got Israel under attack, our number one ally. We, of course, have got the threat of China, North Korea, and then Russia with Ukraine. And so how a weak America on the foreign stage facilitates all of that, enables all of that. We've got to talk about unleashing American energy again, how critical that is for national security, how critical it is for economic security, how critical it is for our economy. Generally, so many things are made from petroleum. Everything is shipped by petroleum. How extreme Harris and Walz are on energy, how extreme they are on climate, and, you know, trying to ban gas-powered vehicles and so forth, and they want to invest in, or not invest, it's wasting money on unreliable, unaffordable energy. There's so much there to expose them on, and we've got to be relentless to that effect while sticking true to our conservative principles as well.
Yeah, and standing up boldly, like you said, I mean, as much as they are proud to be communists, we need to be proud to be conservatives and to actually believe in the American experiment and our rule of law and the U.S. Constitution and actually use the powers that are given to a legitimate government to protect the rights of Americans and to advance policy in that regard. So in just the last 2 minutes, I know you have to get to another meeting, Congressman Bob Good, and we always appreciate your time here. What do the down ballot races look like in terms of Congress and the Senate heading into November?
Well, we can take nothing for granted at the presidential level, at the Senate level, and in the House level. We need to fight for every vote, not assume anything is leaning our way or that we're in an advantage position. We got to run like we're behind. We got to win these swing states, obviously, at the presidential level. And then on the congressional level, while I think the American people are primarily with the issues, and I think the American people recognize to a large degree the harm that's been perpetrated by Democrat policies, Biden-Harris policies, and they're suffering under those policies, there's not just with the way that the country has changed in the way that, you know, Democrat seats tend to be in these hyper blue states and these big blue cities, and the way that redistricting has taken place. There's just not that many swing districts available. There's not that many available seats to pick up. So we've got to fight for everyone. Obviously, you know, the Senate is so important that we win, you know, back West Virginia, that we win Montana, that we win some of these other states where, you know, Arizona, we win Pennsylvania and so forth. We got to have a Republican Senate. And we've got to help people to realize that you can't vote for President Trump at the top of the ticket and then vote for a Senate seat or a House seat, a representative who would undo or block President Trump's agenda. How both are so critical, winning on the congressional level as well as winning on the presidential level to reverse the harm that's been perpetrated these last 4 years and under which the American people are suffering.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Representative Bob Good. We always appreciate your time this morning. And to his point, I mean, we have to make sure that we are voting all the way down ballot. And I know that there are a lot of listeners that aren't really sure what they're going to do at the top of the ticket. I would say vote for truth, vote your values, but do that all the way down ticket. And if you were someone who, you know, may even abstain or write in or whatever you're going to do at the top of the ticket, don't forget that the rest of the ballot also matters, and make sure that you know who is running, that you're actively engaged in your state and local level as well, because a lot of this, as Daniel Horowitz was talking about earlier in the program as well, a lot of this matters to how your state is going to resist a tyranny from the federal level. I mean, we all remember, it wasn't that long ago when we went through everything with COVID and we saw the differences between how blue states versus red states responded and how California was terrible and Florida was free and open. And there was a contrast between the ideology and the worldview that largely liberals versus conservatives, or I mean, Marxist communists basically versus conservatives, how they view the legitimate power of government and their obligation in using that power. And so it all comes down to, again, to worldview and what does that individual in office, whether it's the highest office in the land, whether it's governor of a state, whether it's local dog catcher, what do they believe is the legitimate purpose of government? Do they believe in limited powers of government? Do they believe in self-government and the individual and preserving and protecting freedom and property rights? Or has this just all been shifted to so-called civil rights that are these intangibles and this way of forcing in all of the critical theory so that we get to these ridiculously protected classes like we're seeing in so many of the Supreme Court cases? And what about judges? I mean, what about the judges that are going to be nominated not only on the federal level and the federal judiciary from the next president, whether or not the Supreme Court has vacancies, there will be federal judges that are appointed. And then on the state and local level, understand how that works in your state. And that's why, I mean, all of these races matter. Every single person in elected office that has any shred of government power, you need to know what the individual running for that office believes about American government, about the legitimacy of government, and about the limited power that is given to the government overall, but also to that specific office. And to Daniel Horowitz's point as well, will that person use the power of government affirmatively, not just continue to defend like conservatives often do, but to actually advance conservative policy, advance majorities, advance protections? And Florida is the manual for how a conservative government ought to be run in our laboratories of democracy. And last thing, I would also encourage you, if you want to learn about Tim Walz, go to Olive Tree Ministries on Rumble. And my good friend Michelle Bachman, who of course is from Minnesota, knows that state very well. She did an entire program that is called No Longer Normal. I'm about halfway through it because it's 2 hours long. But if you really want to know what's going on in this country, she recommended that program to me yesterday when I was asking her about Tim Walz. It's really excellent. I have so much respect for Michelle Bachman. I've known her for years. So I really highly recommend that. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna@AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.